Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined as always by Nate Atkins. It is a time that we should not speak of in the Lucas Oil Stadium press box. We are recording the First Impressions podcast on the end of the season. The Colts lose 23-19. A lot of this podcast is really going to come down to one play. We might as well just start it there. We might be stepping on some of the categories, but this is the best way to sum it up. I think this is a team that really no one expected to be here. You wouldn't have expected to be here if you said they're not going to have their starting quarterback. They're not going to have Jonathan Taylor for seven games. Not going to have Braden Smith for seven games. No Jelani Woods. What they did at the corner position in terms of adding talent and giving away experienced talent, you wouldn't have thought they were going to be here. They got to a chance to really get themselves a chance to win the game outright with a touchdown and an extra point. They go fourth and one. They pull Taylor off the field. They try a little swing pass to Tyler Goodson. Gardner Minshew throws it behind Goodson, who's open. Goodson spins around, can't make the catch. Colts lose. That's sort of the call. That's what everyone's going to talk about. It's a call that I don't know how long it's going to be debated in Indianapolis, but it's being debated right now. So it's a call that I think a lot of people probably wanted to see Taylor on the field.
Yeah, I think we'll probably get into the call specifically in the villain, because I think there's a couple different ways to go with that. But really, this game came down to two kind of seminal moments to me, which is obviously that call, a moment where they went for it on fourth and one and decided to pass and put it in the hands of their quarterback. And then the drive right before that, when C.J. Stroud steps back, has a man right in his face, and delivers a strike across the middle of the field to get a first down that was so bang-bang it led to a penalty on Ronnie Harrison and kind of set up that game-winning touchdown. And ultimately, that's what this game was, is a matchup of two teams that were 9-7 that rebounded from picking in the top five a year ago, that are first-year head coaches, that have culture changes. There's so many similarities to how they got here, and the game was super tight throughout. And ultimately, to me, the deciding factor was just in a passing league, one team had that franchise quarterback out there on the field, healthy, humming, confident, and leading his team into the playoffs. And the other one has that same kind of hope and belief for the future, but their potential franchise quarterback, who could be electric and lift them in moments like this, currently has a hurt shoulder and was on the sidelines. And so that's unfortunately the way that this often goes. This game was basically a playoff game. It's interesting to think about two 9-7 teams. So like a couple years ago, this, you know, could have been like a playoff matchup, even though 9-7 teams wouldn't have matched up. But the 17th game being that extra game, that's what this was. That's what it all felt like. I thought about that the moment that the stadium went dark and all the lights on the phones were out, and just the buzz to it was a playoff atmosphere. And ultimately what happens in the playoffs mostly in this league is that there's that separator in the quarterbacks who are good enough and ready enough and the ones that aren't. And I thought we felt that sting on those final two drives tonight.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to get to the categories. We're going to start with villain of the game, my villain of the game. I feel like I get to pick this one because I've given them hero of the game a couple times. Gardner Minshew. And this is not just for the last play. Although, the more I watch it, the more I think it's a terrible throw. In a spot that it's a terrible throw in a spot that you have – it's really not – it's not a hard throw. There's a guy in his face, but we were looking at the play kind of after we got back from the press conferences downstairs. Throwing around the defender actually should have led Minshew to throw the ball up the field to where Tyler Goodson was headed, which is where Goodson was expecting the ball. It can't be behind him. It can't be low. Goodson has to make the catch. We can get that into that unsung villain or whatever, just because he's in the NFL. But I think it's a terrible throw. It's a terrible throw. And really, it's indicative of the way he played the rest of the game. His numbers, 13 of 24, 141, no touchdowns, no interception. He didn't have the turnover today, but they were bad. They were bad passing. It was an awful game from Minshew when they needed to have it most. And look, I think listeners of this podcast know I'm not necessarily expecting a ton from him. We're just talking about it in context of this game. They could not throw the ball to save their lives. And needed an otherworldly performance from their running back to even be in it, because Minshew he was not seeing open receivers. Alec Pierce, like, he owes Alec Pierce for just not seeing him all season. He was leading people into hits. He was inaccurate. It was just a bad game. It was a bad game. He's been good in some of the games leading up to this. Pittsburgh and last week against Las Vegas, he made some big throws, I think, to get them in this position. But, you know, this is kind of what you just said. When the rubber met the road, he was a backup and a bad one.
Yeah, this was Gardner's moment. This was his kind of last chance to, I think, really show something, where he did. I thought two of the past 3 weeks coming into this, he was pretty good. Those moments you mentioned, Steelers and Raiders, you know, sandwiched around a couple of bad games against the Falcons and Bengals, but this was his moment to lead this team, to engineer it, to manage it. He didn't necessarily have to be the hero with what Jonathan Taylor and some parts of the defense were doing, but he had to manage it. He had to hit the open throws, and he couldn't do it. And if he'd gotten them there, you know, could have gotten into the playoffs, then they would have had an extra game. And who knows, maybe it could have even been a home game based on what happens with Jacksonville tomorrow. And then he's out there for the world to see in a contract year, you know, starting in a playoff game. This was his last kind of chance, I thought, to show the league that that he can be a guy you can win with in a big moment. And he just did not bring that. And so it kind of plays into my villain of the game, because I think it is Gardner at the top. But to sort of make it just a little bit broader conversation, I'm going to go with Shane Steichen for my villain of the game. And again, this is about one game. Shane, on the totality of the season, had a great year. But in this game, that final call to go for it on fourth and the way that they did it, the more I think through it, the more I watch it, and the more that I hear Shane's explanation, he was asked this after the game, are you a guy who prefers players or plays in those moments? And he more or less said plays, and sandwiched around comments where he said this league's all about the players. And it's all kind of twisted and wrong at the end of the day. Like, he had a fourth and one play where, you know, you're going to go down swinging one way or another. You get it, and you can go down and win the game, get the playoffs. If you don't, you need to be able to live with the process and the people you put it on. And so he had options to – he could have given the ball to Jonathan Taylor. Now JT was looking pretty banged up. He had a run in the second down where he went out of bounds. So that's one thing. If you thought he was too banged up, you have Zach Moss, who's converted short yardage all year long. You could slam it behind an offensive line that was moving people that averaged 6.1 yards a carry on 227 yards today. You could have thrown to Josh Downs, who can get open – in a phone booth and make reliable catches, who you don't have to worry about, or you don't theoretically worry as much about catching a ball that's off his fingertips. You could run a rub route to Michael Pittman Jr., who's got all kinds of catch radius in the world and makes those tough physical plays. It is hard to bring down and can muscle for a first down. Any of those plays, if they run them and they come up short, you know, I think I'm sitting here and saying, you know, they shot their best shot, and they just kind of ran out of gas and ran out of what they needed at quarterback. Instead, with fourth and one, he put the game and the season and the playoff hopes on the line of two backups to play pitch and catch when they haven't done it all year. Tyler Goodson at that moment in time had 7 career targets in the NFL. And, and Gardner has missed players on ball placement all season long. And a lot of what's overcome that has been Josh Downs and Michael Pittman making acrobatic or smooth catches with either catch radius or sure hands or laying out for the ball. And so if you're going to try, you're first going to ask him to make a throw that's not difficult, but it does take setting your feet and throwing a good ball. If you're not going to rely on, you know, the players who are going to reliably catch that, you should at least have a player who can kind of naturally do those movements. And asking a running back with 7 career targets to run out of the backfield, and the whole idea is to get him wide open, to then spin around and try and catch a ball off his backside, just isn't the way to go. And I understand, like, Gardner deserves more blame for this, for sure. That's why I agree with the villain. But, again, Shane got to watch this all season long of him missing throws similar to that. And it just became a moment, I thought, of where it almost felt like he was trying to coach for the Coach of the Year award on that play, where if it works and Tyler Goodson catches it and he gets up the field and they go in the win, you know, we are talking about how awesome that design was and how bold it was and how Shane pulled another one out. That's all true. But it's relying on a throw and a catch to be made by backup players who've never really done that in this league at this level in a high-leverage game. And they had other players I thought they could have gone down swinging with them. And I just think if you're Zach Moss or you're Jonathan Taylor or Michael Pittman or Josh Downs, you wish they had bet on you, and instead they bet on a play design, and that ends up ending their season, unfortunately.
I don't think it's as nefarious as Steichen wanting the glory for himself. He doesn't really strike me as that kind of guy. Hasn't really all season. I think it's more just the way his brain works is just this call will work against this defense. And I think that that's gotten him in trouble with the backups at other points in the season too. Like a good example is throwing with Minshew out of his own end zone with Myles Garrett going up against Blake Freeland and Drew Ogletree in the Browns game, and that turning into a strip sack, you know, where it's, you know, he knows I have the right play to unlock this coverage, this look, and maybe doesn't think enough about who he's got in the position to catch the ball. It's kind of a weird call to go back and forth on, because, like, it was open. And if it gets complete, I think it's probably, they're probably down to the 5. Maybe they might have scored. And generally in the past, like when the call is like that, when a play doesn't work but the call is open, I generally side with the play caller there. I do, though, kind of agree, like you want it in somebody else's hands, I think. Just Goodson just hasn't been in that situation. I don't know if I really want the ball. I don't know if I want Gardner doing anything.
Yeah.
Pittman and Downs aside, I don't know if I want to trust Gardner to do anything the way he played in that game. But yeah,
4th and 1, they didn't have to.
I think it's just like I said, I don't know if it's as nefarious as like Shane wanting the glory for himself. I think it's just he tends, like everything we've seen from him, he tends to feel, okay, I know what play will work. And maybe one of the things he needs to work on in the offseason a little bit is, okay, what are my limitations here based on the personnel I have?
Yeah, I don't think it's so much about the glory and that side of it so much as I do think he's betting on a design and thinks that, you know, that is what got him here in theory. But, you know, it does speak to a larger conversation I think he needs to have. And a lot of first-year coaches have to go through this where you realize, like, part of play design is the pieces that you're asking to do the job. And there have been moments this year where he's sort of had to learn those limitations. And I thought he's done a great job adjusting to that. Like the way that he took Gardner Minshew from where he was in the Jaguars and Browns games when he had 8 combined turnovers to what we saw over the past month of much cleaner football that still kind of produced was very commendable. It just seemed to slip away in this one moment where kind of everything's on the line. And it's like, it's one thing if you need to really dial up something because it's such a low percentage moment. But 4th and 1, like, we've seen them, it's almost like the moment got a little to them today, where there have been other moments in 4th and 1 where they would just run Zach Moss behind somebody and slam him up the middle.
They did have some trouble with short yardage earlier. I'd have to look at the numbers, but they had some trouble with short yardage runs earlier in the season, vaguely remembering that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't love Goodson in that spot. I really don't love Minshew throwing it in that spot because he's been off all day. He'd already missed Goodson once.
And he gets some passes batted at the line. And so that's like, you can design these things where someone's open. There's just, you're introducing a little bit more than you need to in that moment. I don't know. It's just, again, it's more on Gardner for he did design a play that was open and it's not a hard throw. And yes, at some point his quarterback, regardless of what we talk about with the limitations, at some point the season was going to come down to could his quarterback make the throw. They just kind of sped that timeline up a week early, I thought, by going that route and asking him to go win it when he didn't show that today and a lot of points this season, I don't think.
That moves us to hero of the game. You have to tell me. I think there's only one answer for this.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's JT. It was Jonathan Taylor. Mm-hmm. This is what I wrote about after the game. I didn't write it as explicitly as I wanted to. But, like, there was a lot of stuff that people have said about Jonathan Taylor this season that he pretty much pushed back on in this game. There's been a lot of stuff said about the way he handles injuries. He came back in out. Now, was he the same player? No. I think the reason he went out of bounds on that second down play is that he couldn't cut. We saw it on the first two plays that he had a negative one and then he had a 0 yard run and he tried to cut and couldn't really do it. And if you watch what he did after that, I'd have to go back. There might have been a jump cut in there. I think most of what he did after that was sort of straight line attacking the hole type stuff on that drive. But he was hurt. And coming back out there, it was like he was saying, Jonathan Taylor, like, you had to be at his post-game press conference, too. He was like, it was like a manic sadness. I don't even know how to describe it, but he was very emotional. You could like most of the players were. But it was also just like an energy to it that was just like, I can't believe we didn't get that. And that's another thing he's been accused of. He's been accused of not caring about his team. He's been accused of not wanting to win. Like his two best games in his career are in win and get in scenarios, in his rookie year against Jacksonville and then tonight in terms of yardage. Like this is somebody who wants to win. I don't think he always communicates the way that's easy for people. He doesn't like to say things, sort of bluntly. He kind of likes to skip past some of the dirty details. And I understand like that none of that stuff's great, but. Sort of the way this conversation went early in the season and the way it went after that, we just ascribed a lot of stuff to Jonathan Taylor that I thought was pretty unfair based on a contract dispute. And he kind of answered a lot of that stuff in one performance tonight.
Yeah, it was something to see him go out with another ankle injury, given just the history and how he got to this point. And they announced that he's doubtful to return, and then there he is pushing through and coming back out there. And it's, you know, and I think the fact that he wasn't able to be at his best at the end kind of does validate all of that in terms of that he's really given it his all. And even with that final drive of not being able to do all that, he averaged 6.3 yards per carry and 30 carries against a defense that really has shut down everybody running the ball since Zach Moss ripped them apart in week two. Like, so this was a moment where you just think like how – I don't know what the Colts would have done on offense without Jonathan Taylor. Zach Moss had 6 carries for 30 yards. And the way they were blocking the run game, I'm sure he could have had some production. But today with their passing game, you needed a monstrous performance from a running back. And they got it. And really all that happened was he got banged up late. And if he doesn't have that injury, I think he probably takes them down and they win the game.
Unsung villain. Unsung villain for today's game. The villain picks were pretty obvious, so there's lots of unsungs.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Goodson's sort of the easy one to go to. So
he might be a sung villain.
Sung, yeah, it's not unsung. But I guess the reason, the way I'll spin the unsung part of it is he's the one here, in terms of like going right at it with vitriol of the obvious contenders, he's the one I'm going at the least because some of what we said about, you know, it was not the best ball, and he's expecting it in one place, and it's in another, and you're turning. And when you're doing that with a quarterback you've barely worked with, that's difficult. And it's a guy who's barely done that with any quarterback at this level, and he doesn't even play the position where you'd be most natural at doing that. So, look, he deserves to be on the list because he was open, and you got to make plays like that. Like, you got to make the plays when they're there to be a playoff team. That's just the basic definition of it. And if he catches that, if he's able to just sort of corral it in his fingertips, haul it in. Even if he just kind of like has to fall down catching it, they, you know, they get the first down and they got, they have a new set of downs. They have a chance to go win it. They have two timeouts. So the moment was there, and, you know, he didn't get a lot of opportunities. So when you get your opportunity, you got to be able to cash in. He wasn't able to do it. It's unsung to me, though, just because, like, he's, we're talking about a guy who was really more their fourth string running back. He was active today over Trey Sermon because that's just how they manage that third running back spot. It's about special teams mainly. And so because he was, that's the way they were going to go, they, you know, they created a little bit more of an offensive role to try and use his skill set, which is more of a receiver. So, but for the most part, I think he, in terms of just the pure running back position, he's the fourth best running back they have. And so he's kind of put in a position where you'd like him to make that play, and he wants to, and he felt bad. He called it a failure. But, you know, it's not like he had a lot of build up to that either. So I don't know.
Unsung villain for me is the secondary. They're not, they were not good. Pretty clear that I think it was Nick Cross abandoned.
Yep.
A two deep roll on the very first play of the game made Juju Brents look terrible. On a 75-yard touchdown pass, Ronnie Thomas on the next touchdown just didn't cover Andrew Beck. I know he's a fullback, but come on,
he's lined up a wide receiver though.
Ronnie Harrison on the play you were talking to, the you were talking about earlier, the seed that Stroud threw over the middle, like it was there. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'll get to this in a later category, like all these guys being in this position. But and Brent's on some earlier, on some early like short routes, not great. The secondary has been it's been a weak link all season.
And Jalen Jones, just to throw him out there on that, just because he doesn't, no one's really blameless on that that big catch and run would have been in the second quarter. By the goal line, by Nico Collins.
The one that Zaire Franklin missed.
Yeah. Yeah. Jalen Jones, not the way you want to see a guy step up and tackle and deliver in that moment either.
Yeah. The pass rush, especially in the first half, also deserves some. But I thought they kind of got it going a little bit in the second half. Like, for instance, on the one over the middle, Tyquan Lewis should have had a sack.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple other plays like that. Like, it's just – this defense's weak link has been the secondary all season. And this, they just, against Stroud, well, I mean, really, the thing was, though, like, Stroud was missing. The Texans didn't have, they had Collins, but they didn't have Robert Woods. And they didn't have Noah Brown. They haven't had Tank Dell for a while. And they're pretty thin at the wide receiver spot other than Collins. And when he threw, I think, to anybody else, basically, it was not that successful, really, for most of the game. And they, you know, this is just, the secondary is overmatched. They're overmatched, and they have been all season.
Yeah, it was amazing to look at them down the stretch of that game and think that, you know, they had second-year Nick Cross making his fifth career start, something like that. They had an undrafted DJ Baker out there, outside corner. They had Jalen Jones as a seventh-round pick. And they had Ronnie Harrison, who's been a safety, but he moved from linebacker a few games ago. Some of that's unfortunate. Injuries to Julian Blackman and Dallas Flowers and, you know, and Juju for a bit there. But, yeah, it's a spot that, unfortunately, they kind of put themselves in of not having just enough outside corners to really to form a good defense to start, but then to have the depth to overcome that. So CJ is, you know, this is what I – why I initially thought that the Texans were going to come out on top in this game is just Colts hadn't faced a quarterback like this healthy since probably Trevor Lawrence in week 6. And so when that's the case, you know, they're going to get exposed for their weaknesses, which was the secondary.
Unsung hero. I'll go first on this. I thought DeForest Buckner was great.
Yep.
Especially considering that Fox 59's Brett Bensley, cameraman, reported that on the first drive, Buckner came out and got something looked at on his right arm, hand, shoulder, something. He was hurt again. And ends up with 6 tackles, a sack, 2 quarterback hits. He was really good, again. Really good today. Doesn't get enough credit. Probably should be in the Pro Bowl. I think I've said this over and over again with Buckner. But just, like, on a day when there weren't a lot of defensive standouts, Buckner I think on a per snap basis was really good. And there were some hustle plays too, like at the end of the first half. Just his effort, the effort he plays with for a guy of his stature is intense.
Yeah, he laid it on the line, and there were, for as good of a day as CJ Stroud had, like it felt like there were some explosive plays he was trying to get to that he just couldn't because DeForest was either pushing a guard into his face or just kind of giving chase and moving him off his spot. Like right at the moments when CJ was ready to pull the trigger, he was having a run away from DeForest Buckner. So
almost got there on the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing to think what this would have been if not for him. He was like, when you think about the things that held them in this game, it really kind of was Taylor and Buckner in a lot of these moments. My unsung hero is Josh Downs. He only got three targets, but turned it into three catches for 48 yards. And he just had that, the 28-yarder on that last drive. That was their best shot at launching that drive because you've got a hobbled Taylor. You've got Gardner Minshew trying to drive the length of the field. You need a touchdown. There just wasn't a lot of kind of big chunk options on their menu at that point in time. And so for him to step up and take that play and make guys miss and get yak yardage to get to 28-yard gain, which was their longest pass play of the game, and I believe, second longest play behind Taylor's 49-yarder. That's what you want out of a rookie is, lower volume day, but step up in the moment and make the kind of play. And I think if they had finished that off, we would have been writing about how Josh Downs sort of, when they needed a big play, kind of stepped up and delivered. And, he's had a very nice rookie year. It slowed a bit down the stretch. He hit his own kind of version of the rookie wall, I think, with just kind of the physical toll of the season and defense is keying in on him in the slot a little bit. But this was a game where they needed sort of that one of those secondary pieces to Taylor, just a little bit of someone else doing something in that moment. And I thought he gave them what they needed, and unfortunately it just didn't go all the way.
That brings us to the interlude, game day observation, and we'll start with game day observation, then get to three football things we love. Game day observation, good job, Lucas Oil. Sounded good from the press box, looked good with the lights early on. Just kind of was hoping that we would get a playoff game, since I know Indianapolis hasn't had one in a long time. Was kind of hoping that they'd get a playoff game. So just good job, Colts crowd tonight.
Yeah, I'll just echo that. It's been a kind of weird season to cover just because this team's contended, but they surprised, but they did so without their rookie quarterback. So I understand kind of why fans sort of were trying to feel this team out for a while. But they really seem to get energized by last week going out and beating the Raiders and having a chance at this. And, I got here at game started 8:15. I got here at 5:45. And the fans were lined up waiting to go through the metal detectors into the stadium, and there were like 50 of them deep. And I don't remember really running into that here when I've come in. So, they came out early. They were loud. They were the light display was awesome in the pregame. And it's such a wild game here where it's like, we're talking so much on the disappointments and the down locker room and things like that. But, like, I think about what would have happened if they did finish this off. And the roof might have blown off this place just to see them kind of have this moment at home, win in that style on offense. And so I think the fans were ready for that. They brought it, just like a lot of things in this game. Just unfortunately, it just fell a little short.
Football things that gave me joy. Number one, pop pass. I love pop pass. I love it at the goal line. I kind of love it in the field of play, too. Love pop pass. Pop pass to Marley Cox, number one football thing that gave me joy.
That was a great.
It's also really hard to cover.
It is. That was a great play call. That was like the one time when, in this game, when doing something, asking Gardner Minshew to execute and deliver, and it was like it was the right way to go about it. So props to Shane on that one. I'm going to. One football thing that gave me joy, just Rigoberto Sanchez boomed a 63-yard punt that I think was one of his best this year. His gunner seemed to be kind of in position, and just they You know, they do what unfortunately happens to this.
Please bring me Ashton Doolin back.
Yes, that would be great. So he didn't end up kind of having the overall day net-wise that he's been having recently, but just I thought he really helped. He gave him a chance with some of these big booming kicks in pretty good direction. And, yeah, just an opportunity to plug a story that I did this week. I know people are probably maybe not as into that right
now.
So it's
Nate things that gave you joy.
Yes. But it's relevant to this game is that Rigo's every home game, although maybe I'm not sure how this one went with how late it was, but most home games, his wife and daughter sit in the stands, and they used to sit in a suite. But when he tore his Achilles and he was entering a contract year, they decided to give up the suite because it cost what his wife compared to the cost of a Toyota Corolla. And so they moved to the stands to just kind of have a cheaper seat, and they found that that sort of energized his daughter in a way that's kind of sent her over the moon as a football fan. So she goes absolutely nuts when Rigo goes out there and booms these big kicks. And so for them, you know, get to see that 63-yarder, that was like it's one of his best punts of the year in one of the biggest games. And so that was just a cool moment for a guy that, you know, a guy who has one body part that's supposed to be perfect and tore the Achilles in it a year ago and has worked back pretty nicely. I think he had a season that was went under the radar because they were so overall not good on special teams, but he was pretty good tonight.
Nate just body shamed punters. He said they only have one body part that's supposed to be perfect. I see you punters. I see you out there in the gym.
Rigo's a pretty darn good athlete.
I used to cover Thomas Morstead, who had incredible upper body strength for a punter. So I'm just shouting that out for Thomas.
He was kind of fast, too.
Number two football thing that gave me joy, Alec Pierce escorting Jonathan Taylor to the end zone. I don't think Taylor necessarily needed it on that 49-yard touchdown run. But Pierce had a game where Gardner Minshew, for whatever reason, has spent an entire season throwing to Alec Pierce and cannot figure out how to get him the ball. He can't find him when he's wide open. He can't get the ball to him in a good spot. Anyway, all of those things are reasons that Alec Pierce could maybe, you know, would maybe, you know, not give as much effort. And you say, well, no, a receiver in the NFL would never do that. May I point you to one George Pickens? But Pierce is on the field all the time, and part of it is because of the blocking like that. Good blocking on that play by Pierce. I think Kyan Granson had a good block too, but Pierce staying in it was a football thing that gave me joy.
Yeah, that was cool. That's man.
Also, personal escorts to the end zone are always fun.
Yeah, it's the one play where, ironically, where you know, Jonathan Taylor had a better time finding Alec Pierce than Gardner Minshew did. So that was good to see. Trying to think what I was going to throw out here from my other football thing that gave me joy. I will just say that there was a play where Michael Pittman Jr. caught a pass and got drilled and drew a penalty, and I was just glad to see it, you know, not be the way it was against the Steelers, where, you know, it wasn't helmet to helmet. It was able to take a big hit, get a penalty for his team, but bounced right back up, and, you know, it was a little scary moment for him going through the concussion protocol two different times, and luckily that did not happen in this one. So kind of any time those guys have a close call and bounce back up, it's something that brings me joy.
Number three football thing that gave me joy, Jonathan Taylor coming back out. I think that's just like an elemental part of football. Anytime any player, well, maybe not any player. Ben Roethlisberger seemed to use it like a little too much. But like anytime a player is injured, goes into the locker room, comes back out, and you know, lays it on the line, I think that's good. There were other examples of that in this game, but with Colts players. But just in terms of Taylor trying to Willis Reed his way to a victory, I think anytime you can use Willis Reed as a verb, I think it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah, I'm going to kind of a little similar to that. A guy who was not able to come back out was Juju Brents, who unfortunately had another hamstring injury. I believe that's his third hamstring injury. And obviously there's not a lot of joy in this story for the way it ended for Juju, not being able to be out there for his hometown team in a moment he dreamed of. But I just want to give him a shout-out for handling it really professionally afterwards, where he – talked to the locker room for about as long as any player, and just really had a good perspective about, you know, how they, you know, he dreamed of and asked for moments like this, and that's going to come with, you know, moments of joy, and it's going to come with moments of pain and moments of growth. And yeah, I just think he was one of those guys that's felt the weight of, you know, the just what it's like to not be out there, and the way that that gets unfortunately too often spun with fans about how that's either some kind of choice by the player or something lacking in their toughness or some ability of theirs. And for him, you know, he's just had, unfortunately, just had some really bad luck this year. It's a little similar to some of what Paris Campbell went through. And, you know, we finally saw Paris come out of it kind of late in his career. Hopefully for Juju, that just starts next year, and it's like you get right back through this. But, you know, that's a guy that I've thought a lot about with the way this went down, is that he was in a moment where he could have been out there on that final drive. And I know he wasn't having the best day, but he dreams of being out there and being the guy to make some of these plays to get his team to the playoffs at home. Like, the storybook moment was there. And for him, unfortunately, an injury happened. And again, I just want to shout him out, because it was easy in the moment to, on that first touchdown, just assume, well, geez, Juju really just got toasted down the field. But it does look on the replay like Nick Cross should have been back there. And it makes sense, because Juju was not drafted at 6'3 to cover guys all the way down the field. So I just think that he's got a little bit more shade than I think he probably deserves. It's been disappointing in the injuries, but I don't think it should throw people off the hope of his abilities, and the fact that sometimes you just have one year where you're kind of banged up and you can bounce out of it, and I hope that's what happens for him.
Too little blame, too much blame. Getting back into the football part of this thing. Too little blame. Who do you have for too little blame for this game?
I guess I'm going to go with, you hinted at it, the pass rush. So there were moments where DeForest Buckner had a really nice game, but just thought we would see a little bit more off the edge particularly. So they had the one sack where they dialed it up with Ronnie Harrison, which was cool, watching him come from depth and kind of surprise the line. But I thought
the timing on that piece was almost a football thing that gave me joy. He almost hit it as a running start. It was. Stroud might need to work on his cadence, was my other thought there.
That's true. That's very true. But just like the edge players particularly, Tyquan Lewis is the one that I think brought it the most. But I thought we would have a moment from either Samson Ebukam, Quiddy Pay, maybe Dio off the edge, where they would make something happen. I mean, you've got Laramie Tunsil, who's a great player, but he's banged up at left tackle. And they had a backup right tackle. And, you know, these are the moments the season kind of built for them to rise up. And, of course, the job's hard when the secondary is like it is, and CJ's really good. But, you know, there were moments where, you know, they were chasing him around. They just didn't finish and make those big plays. And I don't know, it didn't necessarily have to be a strip sack, but just a couple of more sacks, something to kind of knock them out of field goal range or make the third down too hard to pick up. Just, you know, for guys that rose to the moment today, you know, Jonathan Taylor did it, DeForest Buckner did it. They kind of needed one more piece to do it, and I thought that would come from one of the edge rushers, and it just never really did.
Yeah, no sacks, no quarterback hits for any of those guys that you mentioned. Too little blame for me, Chris Ballard. Just for the secondary. I'm going to keep hammering that. He made the bet on this. You know, he said there were going to be ups and downs. He knew that was going to happen. If we're talking about this game in general, like, this team ended up being better than they thought. They had a chance at the playoffs. Secondary's not there. Like, we knew going in. Everyone knew going in, if the Colts can't get to Stroud, the secondary's ripe for the picking. That's partially on him. That's partially on Ballard for not – I know there's injuries there, whatever. Like, they need more corners. They need more safeties. They need all that stuff. I just realized we forgot a category, so we're going to go back to it before we get to too much blame. Number of the day.
Oh, okay. I just want to piggyback off that a little bit. I just want to make a point to say, like, when you look at the season in totality, the Colts finished 9-8. I have a hard time really pinning much on many individual players, because I really feel like this team, especially relative to their youth, relative to what they had to work through in terms of losing guys like a quarterback and a star running back for most of the year and a right tackle, like relative to those individual players and the situations they had to deal with, there's certain things you can nitpick, as we've talked about with Jonathan Taylor and the way he handled things. But for the most part, there's almost no I have a very hard time really blaming the players here. You know, whenever they fell short this year, I think it's kind of like because some of them were backups. That's what Gardner Minshew is. And that's, you know, and it was bad luck to get to him. But the secondary part of this, like Jalen Jones, Daryl Baker Jr., those are just not guys who should be out there in a moment like this. And there was some bad luck involved with the injuries and whatnot. But if you take all the injuries away, they were not going to have experienced outside cornerbacks to rise up and be super confident and dialed in and baiting quarterbacks at this time of the year because they didn't put anyone on the roster. And so it's weird because I feel like if you go through the rest of how Chris Ballard managed other positions, he has a lot of wins this year. You know, like he bet on the offensive line and it really worked out. You know, he did get the deal done with Jonathan Taylor. You know, I think Alec Pierce could have worked out if it wasn't for losing Anthony Richardson, and the pass rush came together and they got the 8-man group. So a lot of things worked out. The thing that killed him, though, was one more premium position that just went unaddressed, and that was outside cornerback. And it goes back to what we said in the beginning, which is like they thought this would be a growth year and a learning year, and I did too, but they could have given themselves the chance for it to be a little bit more by just signing some. Yeah, I think about guys like Rocky Sin, who signed for 1 year and $6 million. Some guy like that who has played and been in moments could have helped, and they could have used it in this game.
My number of the day is – been trying to do the math in my head all day, or this entire time. But it's the total number of yards Jonathan Taylor has in winner go-home games. It's 253 plus 188 plus 77. I'm not entirely sure I'm doing that right off the top of my head. But it's whatever that number is. This is what happens when it's 3 a.m. and I'm doing the first impression. He's been really good in win or go home situations. Even in the game in 2021, he had 15 carries for 77 yards against Jacksonville in that horrible game that we don't want to speak of. Obviously, he had the 253 yards as a rookie. He had the big game today. When the chips are down and they need to win or get in, Jonathan Taylor's been great for this team.
Yeah, no question about that. My number of the day is one of 12, which is what the Colts were on third and fourth down on offense. So it's actually kind of amazing to think that they were like 15 yards short of winning this game. You know, in a game when CJ Stroud did the type of things he did. I don't know what that exactly speaks to. I guess it speaks to Jonathan Taylor and DeForest Buckner and just some of the plays they made to will this and a couple other decently big plays they got out of Michael Pittman Jr. and Josh Downs. It just showed you that like all games, something between the players executing those third downs to the play calls, it wasn't their best out there today. And that stat right there I think sums up to me why they're just a little short of the playoffs.
Too much blame. Too much blame for this game.
Tyler Goodson.
I have. Is that your pick?
It is my pick.
Yeah.
And I mean, I mostly laid it out. I just think that can't be the moment of outrage for this game. He deserves some blame because he didn't make the play, but like, he's not supposed to. I was surprised. I didn't even know that he would be active. I did not know he'd be in that role. Did not know that.
Well, he's kind of been the pass catching guy for a while. You mean that play though?
Yeah, just that fourth down, like that he was going to be in a major moment like that. Because the way they talked about it was just like, oh, you know, that's the way we ran the plays all week. That's almost like they designed it all week to do that. And it, I don't know, didn't look that way, feel that way. And just the fact, it's just he's a running back trying to make a catch that's on a bad ball. So if you want him to be Christian McCaffrey, you can, I guess, but no, I'd rather just ask for the quarterback to make the throw that a lot of backup quarterbacks should make.
Too much blame for me is the offensive line. I don't even know if everybody was blaming it. I just saw a little bit of it on my timeline. They gave up one sack and three quarterback hits total.
Yeah, that's
and then rushed for a gazillion yards. It was a weird, there was some weird stuff in the middle of the last, Joel. There was a lot of stuff that was also, like, honestly, if you're asking me why can't Gardner Minshew make deep throws at this point, you haven't been listening to the pod or really watching me tweet all season. But, like, that was a weird one. I had a couple of, like, the offensive line is terrible things. I was like, they have given up, like, Minshew's barely been touched. That was weird. Yeah.
No, anyway. I'd say behind Taylor, they were the best group out there today. Behind Taylor Buckner, the offensive line was the next best thing they had.
And they were hurt.
They were. They were hobbled.
Smith was hurt. Quentin Nelson was hurt. Ryan Kelly was hurt.
And like then they played without Braden for a quarter.
Yeah.
And like, I remember thinking, like, well, this could get, like, terrible. And it didn't get wrecked. Like, they found a way to give their best.
That leads us to the last two, one to throw away and one to go on. Luckily, this doesn't have to be a one to go on for the whole season, although I might do this. Take to throw away from this game. What's your take to throw away from this game?
I mean, if you're going to use this game to say that, like, Alec Pierce doesn't have it, throw that away. I'm mostly going to throw away Alec Pierce's season as an evaluation of where he's at. I'm not going to give him a total pass and assume that he's a great player because he hasn't proven that either. But I'm not, like, this season didn't work out for his skill set and his role with what he needs at the quarterback position. And
so many unthrown open routes.
So many. And today just, to me, really crystallized it as, like, clearly that was in the game script. They went to him early. They dialed up a shot play deep. They did the crosser to him. Like, he was a primary read on some plays and just ball was never catchable. And it's unfortunate this game especially because, you know, talking to some other Texans writers and looking into them, like, one of the things that has been their Achilles heel is play action deep shots, is they kind of leave those kind of open with the way they play their safeties, and they've got a young secondary. And Alec Pierce, skill set wise, should be the guy to do that. And we could criticize him if he had dropped the pass or, you know, could never get open. It just, they didn't even really try it down the field because they weren't built to. And until they are, we're just not going to get a real evaluation for him. So, you know, it's like I said, I'm not saying I know what he is, but I'll tell you what I know he's not. He's not a zero catch out of four target guy if he has a quarterback who's getting the ball.
One to throw away for me is just sort of I get being upset about a loss, but like the sort of fire everyone, everyone's dumb, this is never going to work, we got to just give up on this staff right now. Wherever that's coming from, like, that doesn't make, I don't think that's most of you, if I'm being honest. I don't think most of you fall into that camp. Like, they played most of the season with their backup quarterback. And you can say, like, I want them to win, that's great. They have a developmental quarterback. Like, this is just not time to pull the plug on, like, the whole, like, it doesn't make sense. You got a better season than you expected. From a first-year head coach, you didn't have your rookie quarterback who looked better than you expected before he got hurt. And then it came up short in the last game, basically because you didn't have your rookie quarterback and the other team had theirs. I don't know. That's getting furious about that from a direction of the organization standpoint doesn't make sense to me. There's some stuff they need to fix, to be sure. But, like, we also kind of knew from the beginning that they weren't trying real hard this year. So, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing to take.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add to that, like, even though I made Shane the villain of this specific game, like, on the season as a whole, I don't know how much more you can really ask out of the coaching staff.
Jonathan Taylor hammered on this with the play call. Like, he hammered on, like,
yeah, like, when
stop questioning Shane's play
call. He said, when have you questioned his play calls all year? Which is kind of the point. It's kind of why I took the chance to do it, is that there have been very few moments of play calls that I could question. There's been a couple of game management things that are natural for a first-year head coach. But almost every single thing that you could throw out there that's been a coaching issue, we could come back and say, actually, it's probably more of a personnel issue, more of a front office issue. So there's blame to go around when you fall short. I don't think it's with them.
That leaves us with one to go on, something to take away from this game. I'm going to let you go. Mine is very simple and very short. But I'm going to let you go first.
I'm intrigued. I'm going to go with that the Colts are a dominant rushing team, and they're going to go into next year and be a dominant rushing team because we saw what Jonathan Taylor can be once he finally kind of gets through the weirdness and gets back to himself. I think we'll see we'll see what they do with their backup running backs. I think, you know, Zach Moss may leave, but Trey Sermon showed some things. Like the way that they're dialing up the run game, I think some of the backs that they're looking at, if the way they fill out the depth chart, it gives you hope. And then the real thing is Anthony Richardson is going to be added to this. And just imagine what that would have been like today to add that rushing threat in the backfield with the way they blocked from the offensive line to the tight ends to the way Jonathan Taylor was running. Like the moments this year when things have frozen for that run game have been either that five-man bare front that's kind of stymied the zone blocking, or it's really come down to that there's just not that quarterback threat, run threat, so they just kind of all converge on the running back. I think you add Anthony Richardson into this, and then the fact that he can run that way on some of those scrambles where there were scramblings for Gardner, and he would go and get, you know, he had like a 9-yard scramble. Anthony may turn and hit a lane and go for 35.
He also some of those he also came up short of like a good 11 billion first downs this season.
Yeah,
it's not that many. It's more like six, but like
it
they
was
felt
kind
like
of an odd skill of his. And Anthony,
football,
while
things that don't give me joy, watching people go down before the first down marker.
The diving a yard short is that was a weird habit of his. But with Anthony, obviously we'll have the conversation about, you know, he's got to not take big hits. But at the same time, he's so freaking fast that he can get that first down marker, then slide and still easily have it. And so I just think there's a lot of hope for the future about you give Shane Steichen the ability to design an offense with this offensive line coach, blocking scheme, Jonathan Taylor, and Anthony Richardson. I think the run game is going to be absolutely electric next year, so long as these guys can stay healthy, which is an if, but whenever they're out there, I think it's going to be pretty fun.
My one to go on, my one thing you can take away from this game and go on, and this is going for a long time because it's till next season. You can stop worrying about Gardner Minshew. It's Anthony Richardson time again. I fully endorse all worrying and or thinking about Anthony Richardson, but you can stop thinking about Gardner Minshew. It's done. Bye.
Yep, this is a – huh. I just realized that. This may be the last podcast we talk about him.
Probably not, because there'll be questions about backup quarterback in the offseason, but – definitely the last time we talk about him in terms of a starting role for the Colts, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think he's probably going to get signed elsewhere.
Yeah, I think he's going to go for somewhere else that has some chance of stepping in. So,
and more money.
RIP to us trying to talk through a lot of this. It's been a challenge at times this year.
I've been fine. I'm good. It's Anthony Richardson time again. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, that's the first impressions off of the last game of the season. We are in the offseason officially, like I said. The Colts will not be doing locker cleanout on Sunday. If you're listening to that, don't be expecting any news. They're doing it on Monday. It'll be early in the morning. We'll have a chance to talk to – hopefully, maybe we get a chance to talk to Anthony on Monday. And then, obviously, Chris Ballard at some point in the next couple weeks. Usually it's the week after the season. Mm-hmm. We'll do his thoughts on the season. But until then, until Monday, for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel Erickson and Nate Atkins. The Colts are 9-8, and we are headed home.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.